Welcome to episode 113 of the Golf Talk Podcast, brought to you by thesandtrap.com. This is Eric Barzeski. Alan Olson joins me.
Nope.
This is, we're giving ourselves a mulligan. Our first attempt at recording this podcast failed, or half failed.
Miserably. This is episode 113 and a half.
113, take two.
Yeah.
Yep. We'll jump right in, though. Sean O'Hare wins in Quail Hollow, holding off a few big-name players. Bubba Watson made a charge. Phil Mickelson even made a charge earlier in the day. Quite a few other names are up there, including Tiger Woods, who did absolutely nothing. But we'll talk about that later. Sean O'Hare, bogey's last hole and still enough to win.
Yeah, I mean, it was a really fun tournament to watch. Sunday's round was filled with a lot of ups and downs. I was ready to hand it to Zach Johnson, and then he hit hole number two.
Right.
Which was a pretty easy par three, and he completely blew up on it. So
it made a nice triple.
Made a nice six, which I feel is pain.
In his defense, one of the articles we'll link to does say Zach Johnson had a headache. He went into the day with, a two-shot lead, 11-under and 9-under, I think, was next. But yeah, he had a headache, and he couldn't see very well. The shot at number two, just a bad swing.
Yeah, that'll happen. It was a really well-run tournament. You know, other than Tiger inexplicably not showing up in the final round, it was just a lot of good golf, and it did seem like the lead changed quite often, and I thought Quail Hollow did a pretty good job.
Well, Sean O'Hare, and to his credit, shoots a final round 69 to get it done. Bubba Watson was in the hunt for a while. Like I said, shoots a final round 70, but bogeys on 9, 12, and 16 offset birdies on 10, 11, and 13. So an even par back 9 wasn't quite enough to get it done. Lucas Glover had it for a while, but, you know, a bogey on 12 and a bogey on 17 really cost him. That bogey on 17 was critical. He blew it pin high, but well right of that par 3 because the water's left. Couldn't get up and down, and then failed to birdie 18 to tie Sean O'Hare. Of course, Sean O'Hare 3-putted 18. So had he not done that, it wouldn't have mattered. It would have been two shots. Tiger Woods, from 9 on, all pars. When he really needed birdies, including a 3-putt at the 14th hole, the drivable par 4. He was pin high there and 3-putted. He really probably felt like he needed to eagle at that point. So other people that kind of shut up for a while, you know, Phil Mickelson, like I said, had a good round. Jonathan Bird shot 66 for a backdoor top 5, tying with Phil, who shot 67. Good round for Phil, although he made a mess of the 5th hole and bogeyed it. So Sean O'Hare, you had mentioned the first time we recorded, three wins for a guy under 30.
That was kind of surprising. I mean, he joins up with Adam Scott and Sergio Garcia as the only three that have done that. And I guess he doesn't come to – he's not one of the first guys I think of when it comes to one of the best golfers under the age of 30. So,
right.
Although lately he's done more than the other two guys combined. So
he's had a good year so far. He also – his wins are getting bigger too. He won to get into the British Open. His first win, I believe, was at the John Deere. Correct me if I'm wrong. His next win came at, what, the Pods Championship?
Something like that.
So not the week before a major. So a little bit more full field type thing. I think he overtook Stuart Sink in that one. So he won the Pods Championship or something. And now he wins the Quail Hollow Championship. He's also contended at Bay Hill and, of course, the Players Championship when Phil Mickelson won. So his wins are getting bigger. And with the Players Championship around the corner and majors, obviously, on the docket, back in the Masters now, he could be maturing.
Yeah, I mean, this he could definitely be one of the highlights, if you will, of good American golfers under the age of 30. And, you know, from tee up into the green, he played quite well as putting.
Didn't make a putt inside of 10 feet or outside of 10 feet, though, for the week. That, I mean, to win a tournament, Dave Koster, you know, in the numbers game has written articles about the 40-30-20-10 rule. 40% of winning on the PGA Tour is putting. He hit it so close all week, for the most part, that he got to 11 under without having to make a putt outside of 10 feet.
Yeah, that, I mean, that is really quite quite impressive for him to be able to pull off that feat. So
we'll look for good things from Sean O'Hare. Maybe he'll go to China to play. Ooh, in the HSBC tournament.
That would be fun.
It's now a WGC event. Tiger's played a few times, gotten like $2 million bucks in appearance fee money. It's going to be unofficial in every way except two ways. Number one is WGC event, so they can't give appearance fee money. So that's $2 million has kind of been rolled into the purse, which is now $7 million. And you get into the Mercedes Championship, but nothing else counts, basically. The win doesn't give you a two-year membership on the PGA Tour. It doesn't count towards FedEx Cup points or the money list or anything like that. So if it's a WGC event, I don't know who will go now.
Yeah, it is pretty interesting. I think the timing with it being at the first week in November, I'm not sure how many people are going to hop on a plane and cruise over to China.
Tiger might make it part of his yearly trip. He sometimes goes to, you know, China, Thailand, the Asian area for 2 weeks or so.
Right. You know, it's good for marketing, good for Nike.
That's good for that area, too. I think, you know, there's a lot of interest in women's golf over there. Not quite as much in men's golf. I mean, there probably is, but they're not quite up to the level of men's golfers. You know, the PGA Tour is not being overrun by Koreans quite as much as the LPGA Tour is at this point. So I think it'll be good to have a little more stiffer competition over there.
Yeah, it'll be good. And, you know, this is the first actual World Golf Championship that's being played outside the U.S., so we'll have to see where this ends up leading.
Yeah, how do you like the course? That's our third topic here off the tee. The course setup at Quail Hollow.
I thought Quail Hollow, it was very entertaining to watch. The rough was low, but it's still a tight driving course. The greens were like concrete, and if you were able to smack a good drive in the fairway, you were rewarded with it rolling about 9 miles.
Yeah, I made the point in the earlier podcast, and I'm glad you pointed out the one difference being the narrowness of it all. But this course, aside from the narrowness and all the trees and things, struck me as kind of the way Augusta used to be. Not the way Augusta's been the past couple of years, and I don't want to hear about weather because the weather was fine this year. Firm greens with some slopes and contours that could either help feed the ball to the hole or away from the ball, or, you know, you had to control your distance and your spin and everything to get the ball close. Firm fairways, so the ball could run either in the fairway or run into trouble, and not much rough. So this course struck me almost as the way Augusta used to be. And what did we see on Sunday? We saw people making birdies. We saw people making bogeys. We saw people hitting it in the water. We saw people hitting great shots. We saw people hitting nearly great shots that bounced, you know, 20 feet over the green. We saw what the final round at Augusta usually gives us.
Yeah, there was quite a bit of excitement, and you know, you were rewarded if you got in the fairway, and sometimes even if you got in the fairway, the ball would just continue to roll and roll and run into a bunker or run into the rough or
the pine straw areas around the trees.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So I mean, distance control definitely came into effect, and I think it just showed that you don't have to have 4 or 5 foot long rough to make these guys work.
And there were short hitters up there. A lot of people said it favored the bombers because they could bomb it out there. And since there was no rough, they still had shots to the green. But, you know, I think the tightness kind of helped limit the bombers because they had to be wary of rolling through the fairways. And even if they were just in rough and not pine straw, there still might be trees in their way. So they'd have to curve a shot around or something. So the tightness kind of offset the rough a little bit in that some shorter and more accurate hitters were still in the mix. You know, Jeff Maggart, Zach Johnson, a few others were still in the mix. They didn't quite end up at the top of the leaderboard in the end, but they were there for a while.
Yeah, and I think a course setup like this really gives a good majority of the field a chance to be able to do something. I know there were some comments about some people not liking it or thinking that it gave the big hitters some sort of an advantage, but I thought it made for a compelling golf on Sunday, and it was quite enjoyable to watch.
Well, we'll be right back after this, so stay seated.
On a scorecard, all shots are created equal.
A stroke is a stroke.
From the first tee
to the 18th green.
There's only one piece of equipment
I use for every one of them.
I use for every one of them.
My golf ball.
My golf ball.
And in a game where just one shot can decide a championship,
the ball you play makes a difference.
And that's why there's only one ball.
There's only one ball I'd ever play.
Performance counts. Quality counts. Every shot counts. Titleist, the number one ball in golf.
Hopefully you're still seated. Our forum topic of the week is the Players' Championship, and we get to do our prediction segment. And quite honestly, I have no idea who to pick.
Sergio.
I think in the... no, Adam Scott, no. You know, looking at the who all is going to be there, I would have to, if I was going to pick one person that had to put money on it, I'd probably go with Kenny Perry. I just think that his volume of work thus far this year puts him definitely at the top. I think he could probably make the case for Sean O'Hare. But I don't think I'd take Tiger versus the field.
I wouldn't take Tiger at this point. And that's something we'll get into later, but he's not all there. I think this course will... puts a lot of demands on being all there.
And I'm not sure we're going to see, you know, some of the past champions. Sergio, you know, about the only news he's made is, you know, complained about the Augusta course set up during the Masters. Adam Scott's been AWOL the entire year.
Is Phil? Phil's got to be up there.
Phil.
I think two years ago.
Yep, I think Phil's definitely in the running, but there again, it's how straight is he off the tee? I mean, if he blows one out of the course, or two, right, or if his driver's a little crazy.
Yeah, I don't know. 2 years ago, he just started working with Butch Harmon, and now 2 years later, he doesn't seem to have improved noticeably. So that's tough to say. I think Phil's putting is actually more suspect than his driving lately. You know, he four-putted a par three for a double during the Wachovia Championship, or the Quail Hollow Championship. I don't know. He's got to have both parts of those working. He's got to be driving the ball well and putting well to win. So I don't know. You know, Sean O'Hare is certainly the hot pick. Kenny Perry played in the last group with Paul Goidos last year when Sergio won. David Toms is playing well. I think he's finally over some injuries and stuff. And, you know, if a guy can place the ball like he can and putt like he can, I think David Toms is a good bet.
Yeah, well, absolutely. I think that's an excellent, I guess you can really call him a sleeper pick, if you will.
Yeah. Camilo Videgas, somebody else mentions in the thread, possibly. It's back in Florida, too. So Jim Furyk, I'm going to say no. Same with Vijay Singh, even though it's both their home course, basically.
Yeah, I don't know. Neither one of those two really strike me as somebody who's going to be up at the top of the leaderboard. I don't know. Will we see a Charles Howell the third sighting? He seems to kind of come and
go. Sure, but then he'll fall apart somewhere.
You know, the final round, he'll shoot 72. And
if Cody's listening, dude, your man can't get it done. Sorry.
We like him. He's playing well, but man, that final round, it just kills him.
Contribute your predictions to the forum thread. Click the show notes and tell us who you think will win. Try to do so before Thursday. Otherwise, you're just picking a leader and saying, yeah, I picked him all along.
And then we can bash you for picking late.
Tiger Woods. What's wrong with Tiger Woods? He says he needs to be more consistent. David Faraday, in the post-round interview before calling him a loser like six times, said it's the long and the short of it. The driver and the putter wasn't working. Obviously, the driver's not working. The putter was okay, I think. He didn't miss putts by a whole lot, really. I mean, they were just marginally off. And, you know, from 30 feet, missing a putt by 2 inches is not a big miss, really. And I think it's distance control. You know, Tiger Woods has always said the secret to playing good golf is being pin high. He was pin high about twice in 4 days, it seemed like, not counting his chip shots when he was trying to recover from trees for par.
Yeah. The distance control is probably the biggest surprise, because that's something that we haven't seen yet. The times that he's been out in the middle of the fairway and he's got a 5-iron or an 8-iron or 7-iron in his hands, and you expect him to be pin high or pretty close, and he's barely getting it on the green. You know, he's quite short. I mean, he looks, quite frankly, he kind of looks like me out there being short for the green. But that surprises me the most. I mean, we kind of expect the driving, because he's kind of been erratic with that, unless he's got 3 wood in his hand. But it's just really surprising to see him come up short and not be pin high when he's got an iron in his hand from the fairway.
I think it's almost, he talked after Thursday's round about when he shot 7 under and then basically did nothing the rest of the week. He almost shot 7 under in the first round, then even par almost the rest of the way, managing 2 under only the rest of the way in. He talked about getting his pop back, you know, his speed, his strength, about not being tired when he goes to practice after a round. And I'm not sure if that pop is all the way back. It seems like on the shots where he gets pin high, he had that pop. And then other times he hits a 9-iron 30 yards short, 20 yards short, 2 club short. And maybe he didn't have the pop on that swing. You know, it's almost like he compensated for so long with the knee issues. Now it's inconsistent because he doesn't know necessarily if he can trust it or something. I honestly think distance control is a big issue. And it goes way back to his first event, the match play. His distance control was way off then. He was coming up short of the greens with 9 irons at the match play. And to some extent, that continues.
Yeah, that's pretty surprising, especially to see. The first event, you can kind of expect to see that. But now that he's played enough, it's really just kind of surprising to see him still having that issue. Although it's hard to call an issue for a guy who's won and finishes in the top 10 every time.
All right, and he could probably get away with hitting his 3-wood. He won a bunch of majors hitting his 3-wood or long irons off the tee. Might hurt him a little bit on some of the par 5s, but those tend to be a little bit more open driving holes anyway. But, you know, when you're leaving yourself 40-foot putts for birdie all day, or 6-foot putts or 7-foot putts for par all day, it puts a lot of pressure on your putter. You know, your putting stats are going to go up. So I'm not sure I buy into the putter theory. I think it's more of a distance control issue. Yet he finishes 4th, too, so.
Yeah, not bad. Let's have some problems, and oh, by the way, I'm still going to finish 4th.
Sean O'Hare, I think he's just about finished his final round, Quail Hollow Championship. Just a quick link here to an article about, I'm going to start calling him Sean Slow Hair.
Ooh, nice, I like that.
We commented before, I know we did, on Sean O'Hare's slow play. I think it was last year at the Players, or 2 years ago, when he was playing with Phil Mickelson. I know we commented on it, maybe at Bay Hill, even, this year. Dude, pick it up a little bit. You're young. It's not like you're getting tired or something. Move it along.
Yeah, it's just utterly bizarre that he plays that slow. I mean, I realize they're playing for a ton of cash. I get that, which, you know, we get brought up 4,000 times during the broadcast. But for him to play this slow and have to judge the wind this much and figure out which club he's going to use and
Does the PGA Tour not have a rule anymore about slow play?
That's the problem. You have to be out of position. There has to be like a hole open in front of you. You have to be out of position before they'll even look at you. So if everybody plays slow, they all get away with it.
It's mind-numbing to watch.
We just need those clocks like they have at courses where they set them back. And then if you're not there in 2 hours, it says, if this is your starting time, if you're not here by your starting time, you're behind pace.
That would be cool.
Every 15 minutes you're behind that, you get a penalty stroke.
That would be nice. You could have guys and maybe get rewarded if you get done in 3 hours.
Yeah. John Daly would like that.
Here, John, you shoot an 80, but guess what? Congratulations. You just shot 68 because you got done in 2.5 hours.
Mark Kalkovecki, there's a lot of fast players. Bubba Watson said he would love to play in 2.5 hours.
Pick it up.
All right. Well, that does it for episode 113, attempt number 2 of the Golf Talk podcast. For links to everything we talked about, check the show notes and do the clicky-click thing. We'll talk to you next week after we see whether Sergio's putter finds one of the many lakes at the TPC of Sawgrass. Bye-bye.
Cool. Bye.